The others will be able to.
Okay. Okay, first I will read the, I always think of it as a disclaimer, but that's not really what it is. Pursuant to Government Code Section 54953E, and the state declared emergency, this meeting of the Board of Library Trustees will be conducted exclusively through teleconference and Zoom video conference. The COVID-19 state of emergency continues to directly impact the ability of members to meet safely in person and presents imminent risks to the health of attendees. Therefore, no physical meeting location will be available. Please be mindful that the teleconference will be recorded as any Board of Library Trustees meeting is recorded, and all other rules of procedure and decorum will apply for Board of Library Trustees meetings conducted by teleconference or video conference. This meeting will be conducted in accordance with the Brown Act, excuse me, Government Code Section 54953. Any member of the public may attend this meeting. Questions regarding this matter may be addressed to Eve Franklin, Administrative Secretary. The Board of Library Trustees may take action related to any subject listed on the agenda. Okay, shall we call the roll? Eve, please.
1 second.
Sure.
Amy Roth.
I'm here.
Sophie Hahn.
Present.
Diane Davenport.
Here.
Beverly Green.
Here.
And John Soloski.
Looks like present. Not,
oh, there. Okay, we're all here.
Okay. This is the time set aside for public comment on non-agenda matters. Do we have anybody signed up?
Nobody has raised their hand yet.
Okay. Well, we'll give them just a moment and then we'll move on. Okay. next is comments from library unions. Are any of the unions signed up to speak?
I don't see anyone here.
Amy, are you speaking to us?
Yeah. Thank you, Diane. I'm sorry, I don't see any. Do any of the trustees want to make a comment? This is the time. Okay, I don't see any. Oh, boy, Beverly, I do see your hand up. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I just want to continue to thank the employees of the Berkeley Public Library for providing the very important services and the background and experience they have for the citizens of the city of Berkeley and all of its inhabitants. Thanks.
Yes, John?
Yeah, I was, let me lower my hand. Okay. I was going to make a comment along the same lines. I know the past week or so, there have been a couple emails and interactions about mask use. And, you know, first of all, I want to remind the public and those who are listening, there's a prominent sign on the doors of the library, masks are required. It's pretty clear, you know, even if vaccinated, I think it says, even if vaccinated, masks are required. It's pretty clear. And the people who are complaining, I just want to ask, are you a virologist? Are you an epidemiologist? Do you have any training in anything you're saying at this point? Because, you know, the library is going to take care of its patrons and its staff. That's what we're here to do. And there have been cases among staff of COVID during April. It's only the very first week in May. I think it's too early to say this thing is over. And there are a couple of variants out there right now. And, you know, if you can't adhere to the mask policy, then go somewhere else. I'm sorry. That's my take on it at this point. I have very little patience for people who say, well, the governor said this, or this is that, or the health department says, well, this is our policy for now. And we may revisit that at some point. But for now, wear a mask or don't come to the library. Thank you.
Thank you, John. I'd like to just chime in that if people do not want to conform and wear a mask, they can use the very excellent and wide range of services that are available from home. All you need is your library card, and you can do pretty much anything you could do there. Beverly, go ahead, please.
I just want to add that at no time do we want any of our employees to be in danger. The employees are not the police, they're not the enforcers. And so I just want to bring that to everyone's attention. It's important that our staff be safe from any sorts of belligerent or harassment from trying to enforce a mask mandate. So again, they're not the police, they're not the enforcers, they are employees there to share their information.
Thank you. I do not see any hands up. Okay. We can start to move towards the consent calendar, but I know Tess has a correction or addition. Go ahead.
Thank you so much. And I'd like to thank one of our trustees for identifying what was a typo in the packet that was issued. And I would like to clarify how the language in this proposed contract amendment should read, so that when you are able to make a motion with respect to the consent calendar, that you have the information clear ahead of time. This relates to consent calendar item B, the contract amendment relating to innovative interfaces. The typo is basically in the last sentence of the summary here, you'll see that it states that the resolution proposed is to amend the contract's date of expiration to June 30th, 2022 from December 31st, 2025. That is incorrect. It should be the reverse. It should read that the resolution amends the contract's date of expiration from June 30th, 2022 to December 31st, 2025. We apologize for not catching that error in proofreading, and hopefully that clarification provides you with the information that you need.
Thank you, Tess. can I have a motion to approve the consent calendar? Diane, I see your lips moving, but I can't hear you.
With that clarification on item B, I move the consent calendar.
Okay. Can we have a second?
I will second.
Okay. And can we call the roll?
Amy Roth?
Yes.
Sophie Hahn?
Yes.
Diane Davenport?
Yes.
Beverly Green?
Yes.
And John Soloski?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, we're moving on to the action calendar. First listed is the revised unattended children policy. I'm just getting to that page in my packet. There it is.
Thank you, Amy. I just want to say a few words by way of introduction.
Okay.
First, I want to mention that as we've discussed in previous meetings, we will be bringing regularly for your review a variety of policies, as it is the role of the Board of Library Trustees to establish strategy review policy on behalf of the library. And we do have a number of policies that haven't been reviewed for some time. And the reason that I am bringing this policy forward first or earlier on just relates to something really unfortunate that occurred within the Bay Area library community. I wanted to provide you with this context because I think it's important for us to appreciate the types of issues that are really occurring in libraries and the way that our policies intersect with some of these different circumstances. So basically in March, a current employee of the Hayward Public Library was arrested on suspicion of sexual abuse of a minor having taken place at a library facility many years ago, actually. I'm sorry, off the top of my head, I don't have the number. We don't know the current status right now. Clearly it's extremely concerning, and one of the things that it caused was a lot of discussion amongst the Bay Area library directors around our policies with respect to programs and how we manage situations involving unattended children. And I took the opportunity to review all of our neighboring library systems' policies with respect to this. I also took the opportunity to have discussions with different staff groups, for example, our library council, which is all of our managers and supervisors. I also met separately with our children's team because, you know, they do tend to interact sometimes with children within the context of the central library and branches. I was looking for their experiences, for their feedback, to get a better understanding of how well our current policy has been supporting them. As you can see, this policy was last reviewed, it looks like in 2014, so 8 years ago. And at that time, the policy was really updated just to provide more clarifying language around the requirement that children be supervised by a responsible caregiver. After having some pretty extensive conversations, as I said, with different staff, I actually received very positive feedback from staff with respect to this policy. The policy that we have is unusual because you can see that it actually enumerates procedures more than a policy normally would. But I think in this particular case, it's actually extremely important that it be that clear because it does sort of rise to a level of, there's a need for that level of consistency in terms of how everyone approaches this. It must be handled the same way and it must be handled uniformly. The one piece that I felt was missing, and I just wanna be clear that this wasn't related to anything that's happened at Berkeley Public Library that I'm aware of, but this relates to my previous experiences in working with public services staff. I would like to add this language, this addition of the clarification that under no circumstances shall a staff member transport a child away from the library. It might seem that this is not something that would occur to someone. However, I've just seen that library staff are so compassionate and they just want to help, particularly when they're concerned about vulnerable children. But I felt that it was better to have this explicit in the policy as well, in the list of instructions for staff that's incorporated into this. So that's the context around why I'm offering up this policy for your review first. I wanted to describe my process, and now I'll ask whether you have any clarifying questions with respect to this. John, I do see your hand.
Thank you, Tess. Thank you for bringing this forward. Yeah, I have a lot of experience in this area. As a 26-year employee of the Downtown Y with Family and Youth Services. The policy is actually well thought out and well written. I think for most caregivers and parents, the most important thing is a child will not be left alone with a single staff member. And that's actually always key in any of these policies. But I think your add-on sentence is really well taken and really clarifies what staff should and shouldn't do in these circumstances. Because it actually happens more often than people think. At the Y, we often had kids. Who's the parent? What's going on here? And nobody knew. It actually happens quite frequently in large institutions that handle families and kids. Thank you. And if you want a motion tonight, I'm glad to move this as you have written it, Tess. Thank you.
Amy?
Yeah, I have, this seems perfectly reasonable, and I think the more explicit it is, the better for staff, because then they know exactly what they're supposed to do. I was just curious, is this very different from what was here before, or is it just more detailed?
There are not significant changes in terms of what I'm proposing.
Mm-hmm.
There's okay. Only the one change, and that was after a lot of discussion and review with different staff, checking in, making sure, does this sound right? Does this age sound right? trying to talk through the different scenarios that they've observed actually occur.
Diane?
I'll second John's motion.
Okay, if there's no further discussion, the motion has been made. We can call the roll.
Amy Roth?
Yes.
Sophie Hahn?
Yes.
Diane Davenport?
Yes.
Beverly Green?
Yes.
And John Soloski?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, the next item is the proposed budget for fiscal years 2023 and 2024. And Nika is going to present, am I correct?
Yeah, I think it would be helpful for Nika to, I guess, step forward on the virtual stage here. our intent is not to re-present the information that we presented last month. We do want to share with you, and I'm going to share my screen and bring up one of the attachments that Nika did update, just to provide some clarification. We wanted to provide you with an opportunity to ask additional questions. If you had time to think about what we'd presented and you had questions, I'll go ahead and share that attachment now.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, so I know last month there were questions about trying to see what the deficit or surplus would be without some of the one-time costs that we have taken advantage of in this pandemic of trying to upgrade some of the facilities in the library. And so what I did was it starts with the yellow line where it says capital cost slash one time. And so I took that line to essentially pull out the total one-time cost in the respective columns for each year. I know some are the same year because we show the adapted for FY22 and the projected mid-year. And I showed the adjusted expenditure totals without those one-time costs and an adjusted proposed projected shortfall or surplus for each given year, along with the gross fund balance. So that, because I know that was a question that had come up before of trying to pull those costs out since we do not currently have an active capital improvement fund. And so if there are any questions, and hopefully the way the numbers are presented makes sense to you all. And if you have questions, let me know.
I just want to add that part of, in terms of 2023 projected fiscal year 2023, part of that just related to when the stucco project actually started and when we incurred those expenses, because that project was a little bit delayed in terms of when it started.
Thank you, Nika. I'm not seeing hands. Somebody's got their hands. Oh. Any questions for Nika or Tess? Let's see. I'm not seeing any.
Yes, John. I see John's hand raised.
Thank you. I didn't see it.
Yeah, thank you, Nika. Tess. Do you want a motion tonight, or is this just a clarification?
Technically, we have not adopted the tax rate for the library, which would complete the budget package. So if we were to do that, that would require a separate vote. Generally, I think in the past, the library has waited until we've been able to establish the tax rate to vote on the whole budget as a package.
Right. And we won't know that until next week, I assume.
We were informed, well, Nika, I don't know if you have more information on the consumer price index.
No, we kind of got half of the information a little early. And so we're still waiting. We got the PIG, but we're still waiting on the CIP and to see where the city, which way the city is going. And therefore that will help direct us. So,
yeah. So you don't need a motion tonight. In other words,
no,
we're going to wait for the whole package, basically.
Yes. But it is good to know that we're almost there. And if there are no objections to the information we currently have.
I would have made the motion, just so you know. thank you. And thank you for your work, Nika.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, well, if there are no questions, we will move on to the next item, which is the bylaws for the Board of Library Trustees. John? Your hand is up. Is that old news?
I'm sorry, I just lowered it. It's from previous.
I had one very, I have to find my page. I had just one question about the bylaws, and that is, I just wanted to say in page 2, item 9, about middle of the page, it says that we are supposed to make an annual report to the city council describing the condition of the library and a summary of Bolt's work over the past year, as well as any other reports and information that may be requested by the city council. This is news to me. Is this a, I don't remember ever.
I ever can clarify that point, perhaps.
Okay, and then after you, Tess, then Diane.
Yeah, so this is a responsibility that the board may delegate to the director, and that's what's occurred in the past. And what's interesting, in the past couple of years, the city opted to create a report that was more focused on every department's response to the COVID-19 pandemic. And so our reports to the council, our annual reports, have sort of been framed that way. And the reports are available and they're really wonderful to review in their entirety. I believe that they're available for as public record. But that's sort of the shape that they've taken. We will be going back to a more traditional report, which would be a responsibility that I would carry forward. There's also potential for additional formats in terms of, maybe some kind of annual report on behalf of the library that's done, not just for city council, but perhaps in different contexts. So I think that there are different ways that we could be considering providing information to the community about the library's activities.
Okay. Where can those reports be found?
We will follow up.
Oh, okay.
That way we can identify the best place to locate the link and everything else.
Okay. Diane and then Beverly. Diane.
I had a question on page 7. Please, down at the bottom, Bolt meetings number 2, a regular meeting of Bolt shall be held at least once a month, except in August. We've always taken August off, so we should clarify that. And other than that, everything seemed fine to me.
You know, Diane, if you don't mind, or Tess, if you don't mind me adding or amending that somewhat, except as voted by the full board, because it may not be August. We may decide to postpone a meeting for some reason at another time of the year. You know what I'm saying?
No, not really. No?
Well, what if there's an earthquake?
Like Christmas,
what if there's some kind of a fire, some catastrophe, some unforeseen? And it could be July. It may not be August. It could be, I'm just saying I want to give the board flexibility if possible, and I'm not going to. This again, I'm not planting my flag here in any. I'm just suggesting a little bit of flexibility unless voted otherwise by the board, something along those lines.
Beverly, did you lower your hand? Okay. And that makes sense to me. Yeah, that should cover, there should be language that covers unusual circumstances. Acts of God, as it were.
as it were, or acts of man, whatever. Humanity.
Okay, so in this case, unlike the budget, we are looking for a motion. Well, do we have to have the exact language of that item number in order to vote? What do you say, John?
I will move the item. I think it's right now, it's kind of up in the air. I made a suggestion, but the board, it's a board decision, not my decision. So if we want to give direction on that, I think I will make the motion to approve based on whatever the board wants to approve.
Okay, Diane, do you have a suggestion or a response?
No, I mean, I think, you know, Tess can figure it out how to put that wording in. So however it's done, it's fine with me. I think she knows what our feeling is about it and can figure it out.
Okay. Tess, do you feel confident that you can wordsmith this to death?
Yes, I do. I think there's been some very solid suggestions made already. Okay.
So the intent is clear. All right, in that case, John has moved that we adopt the resolution approving the proposed bylaws. Do we have a second?
Second. I'll second it.
Okay, that was a simultaneous second, I think, Beverly and Diane. Okay,
I apologize. I'm just raising my hand late. I had to step away for a second. We're on the bylaws, is that correct?
Yes, okay. But a motion is on the floor. It's been on the floor and seconded.
All right, I will abstain. There were a number of changes that I wanted to make and I was asked to enter them into a document and share them and I didn't do it because I had a lot of challenges the last few weeks. And I haven't had a chance to go over and make sure that all those things were included. But I'll just abstain. And then if there are things that I think are important, maybe we can do amendments at a later date.
Okay, thank you. John, your hand is up.
Again, sorry, previously.
Oh, okay, yes. Don't forget to take your hand down. All right, there is a motion on the floor and it has been seconded. So Eve, could you call the roll?
Amy Roth?
Yes.
Sophie Hahn?
Abstain.
Diane Davenport?
Yes.
Beverly Green?
Yes.
And John Soloski?
Yes.
Thank you.
Motion is carried. Sophie, your hand is still up. Okay. Next, we have a couple of information reports. First, the Racial Justice Advisory Group update. I'm not sure who's giving that. Maybe you could help me, Tess.
Sure, I'm pretty sure that it'll be embedded in their presentation, if I'm not mistaken. You'll be doing introductions, yes. Everyone can introduce themselves as they're speaking.
Hi, good evening, everybody. I'll be kind of emceeing the presentation. My name is Chin Keita, and we have a slideshow accompanying the presentation. And Amy, yes. We'll share her screen.
Can you all see that now?
No.
It says I'm sharing my screen. You are screen sharing. Not yet, huh?
No.
Let me know.
Amy, our screens say that Amy Reeder has started screen sharing, but nothing is up.
I can also try to launch it too, if it would be helpful.
I have it up. Do you want me to try, Amy?
Yeah, I'm sorry, but I also can't, like Eve is frozen, Trustee Davenport's frozen, so I apologize. My internet's not working properly.
Eve, why don't you go ahead and try to launch it from your desktop? Thank you.
There you go.
Thanks, Eve. Okay, so just introducing ourselves again. I'm Chen Kaita. I'm a library assistant at the Claremont branch. With me in RJAC is Sheila Liu, who is the newly hired children's librarian, actually, formerly a library assistant. We also have Perlita Payne, who is the supervising librarian in adult services at Central. We have Amy Reeder, who is our Central administration as communications head, and Linda Sakamoto, who is the coordinator for our Berkeley Reads Adult and Family Literacy Services. So nice to meet all of you formally. And we can move to the next slide that gives a little timeline of what the Racial Justice Advisory Group has been doing. The call for action came in February 2021 from Tess. She reached out to all library employees and asked who would like to join this committee. And six of us answered the call. One member has left the system completely. Stewart, who had a heavy hand in drafting a lot of our docs that we'll show you later in the presentation. And at the same time, on behalf of BPL, Tess applied for CREAE, which is the California Libraries Cultivating Racial Equity and Inclusion Initiative. Just to give a little bit about that, they were a two-year grant process for public library cohorts throughout the state of California to participate in an immersive workshops designed specifically for government organizations to infuse a race and equity focus into organizational outcomes. So as you see, we were accepted into it in early March, and then we had trainings from March through August. They were a few days long, all day long workshops where CREAE gave us tools and a blueprint on how to look at library work through a racial equity lens from in every department, from collections to forward facing with the public. In September, we've been meeting bi-weekly since then. There have been a couple of months, you know, with holidays and sickness that, of course, had to be given breaks, but we've been meeting regularly. And in September and October, we introduced ourselves formally to the rest of the BPL staff. We had a open house where people could come in and ask us questions. We can tell them exactly what I'm telling you now, just what we've been up to and why we think the library needs this kind of committee. And we did an all-staff presentation, which was with 20 more slides than what we're gonna show you here tonight. I think a couple of the trustees were there actually, so they got the whole thing, but this is just, a summary of it. And then continue on to this spring, we're developing our plan, our racial equity action plan. And that is why we are doing this presentation with you all. We love everybody involved in the library to have a stakehold in this. And if we can move to the next slide, Eve, I think this next slide, I will be passing on to our member, Linda, to give us a little explanation.
Hi, good evening, everyone. Thank you, Jen. I know most of you can already read what's on the PowerPoint slides here, but I want to emphasize some of the key topics that were covered in our training. Mostly the primary emphasis, I thought, was shared language and our foundation of learning, the history of the government and race, and how we have the categories here of individual racism, institutional racism, and systemic racism. Oh, next slide. creating change at BPL. These are some of the definitions and terminology we learned for institutional culture change. I say it, we say it a lot. Normalize, organize, operationalize, visualize. And we were embedded with that phrasing much in our training. And here we have 6 community engagement interactions. And I'm really sorry here because I had a different slide. I'm so sorry. Well, you see what we have there in personal relationships, community partnerships, individual partnerships, infrastructure partnerships, maintain presence, increase access, alternative methods, and modes. And that should be it for me. I really apologize for having to kind of stammer there with this one slide. I was also looking at, for ourselves, the slide of interrupting racism in our workplace.
Sorry.
No, no worries. I'm just going to transition over.
Okay, it's going crazy on me now. One second.
I want to ask Amy. Are you there, Miss Amy?
Sure,
Amy. Hey, Amy.
Amy Reeder. You have to say the whole name.
Oh, Trustee Amy Roth, hello. This is going to colleague Amy in marketing.
Okay.
In community and communications. Amy, are we going into any of the introductions?
Yes, Chin and I were just texting. I think instead of doing that in the front, we skimmed over it. So we'll just do it at the end. And
I think that's a great idea. I think that is very important.
Yeah, just so everybody knows why we're
why we are doing this, why we are on this team, why we are part of our vision of institutional change. Thanks, Amy.
So I think we have Sheila, who's going to talk a little bit about the work that we have done specifically on this slide. So Sheila.
Yes, in the past year, we've developed internal RJAG group norms, processes, and vision setting. we've also worked on a racial equity timeline that highlighted the historic and important moments that impacted BIPOC staff and at the library and community members in Berkeley. We also worked on the FAQ for staff. Questions included, why should the library be concerned about racial equity? Why do we need this if we have a diverse staff already? What is the role of white people in doing racial equity work? And in the course of doing research for our racial equity timeline, we discovered who the first African-American librarian who was hired by the Berkeley Public Library in 1960. On October 26th of last year, Mr. James Jacobs was honored with his own day and a proclamation by the mayor and city council. And during that entire week, the outdoor story times were dedicated to Mr. Jacobs. And in the coming month, we hope to launch a book discussion kit for preschoolers called Conscious Kids. The purpose of the Conscious Kids is to encourage and help facilitate discussions with children about diversity, equity, and inclusion. Each location will get 5 kits. Topics include identity and belonging, journey and immigration, disability awareness, and social justice. There will also be a Spanish language edition of the identity and belonging. Each kit will contain 3 picture books and a discussion guide with a list of. This pilot program is generously sponsored by the Berkeley Public Library Foundation. So thank you very much to them. And another thing that we've worked on is the charge for BPL. And that's going to be discussed in the next slide.
All right, so we developed our RJAG charge. And let's see here, this is our vision for our work within our library system. It looks at where we're at and where we want to go. And it includes staff experiences, including the pandemic, of course, because we thought that was important to add on here. This statement has our guiding principles, and we spent a lot of time ironing it out, and we're quite proud of it. So I'm going to read it to you fully so that we don't miss anything. So from the top, the Berkeley Public Library recognizes that the structures of oppression and white supremacy are built into and sustained by governmental institutions that govern our daily lives, and that structural racism is infused into services ranging from banking to policing and housing, and even within the library's historical structures. Systemic and institutional racism continue to negatively impact our library community and requires long-term structural change. We need to move justice to where power is equitably shared while dismantling white supremacy embedded in our library system. This is the charge of the BPL Racial Justice Advisory Group, RJAG. RJAG is a library created advisory group composed of staff from a variety of classifications and is designed to direct the library's work around and response to racial equity, both internally with regards to staff and externally with regards to community stakeholders. This group will make recommendations to the library's management team on how best to drive forward the important task of making Berkeley Public Library an equitable and inviting space for members of its community. The committee will formalize and normalize the library's work with racial equity, diversity, and inclusivity. This moment in our history calls for a collective recommitment to building inclusive communities and providing services equitably and with empathy. As library staff, we are tasked to lead with kindness and to show care to ourselves and support to each other as we work through historical and ongoing racist impacts and the emotions they cause. RJAG would like to acknowledge and thank all the staff for surviving through one of the most trying years in recent history and still showing up with compassion and empathy for the library's patrons and its staff. It is with your further dedication to equity and providing equitable services to all that we will help eventually end the systemic and institutionalized racism that so plagues this country. RJAG, working as an advisory group to the library's management team, will initially focus on three major tasks. One, equitable recruitment, hiring, and retention of staff of color, including a more comprehensive onboarding support of Black, Indigenous, people of color, BIPOC, leadership affinity groups. Two, training all staff to ensure a consistent and even approach towards providing empathetic, even and non-biased service to all members of Berkeley Public Library's patron community and staff. And finally, three, all public programs and collections must reflect the diversity and variety of interests and needs within our community. So these last three major tasks are the foundations for our upcoming Racial Equity Action Plan, which we will talk briefly about next.
So a racial equity action plan basically lays out the shared vision and priorities for the library's racial equity work. It lays out what we hope to do, what resources we need in order to be able to do those initiatives, how long it will take, and most importantly, how will we know that we are successful? So measures for accountability and assessments. Some examples of things that could be listed on the racial equity plan is some of the things that Perlita was talking about in our charge, or how do we hire and retain and support BIPOC staff? How do we support them once they are hired? Another example is doing like a diversity audit of our collections. Another example that could be on our upcoming racial equity action plan would be looking at our library events. What performers and folks from the community do we offer opportunities to be part of our programs? Where do we hold those programs? Those are the kinds of things that we would address in a racial equity action plan. When you put together one of these, it involves all stakeholders, which means it includes you, our trustees, folks. We will be asking you for your input, for your wisdom, for your concerns, for your thoughts as we develop a draft, and then finally, of course, we'll come to you with a final draft for your consideration and hopefully adoption. You'll be hearing a lot about this REAP, the Racial Equity Action Plan, in future meetings. But I think that one of the most important things, takeaways about it for tonight, is that what a REAP does, what a Racial Equity Action Plan does, is that it takes the work of the racial equity work of the library and makes it visible. It makes it clear. It makes it transparent. So our community knows what we're truly doing to try and serve them, and therefore us be more accountable to our community. Chin, do you want to take it away?
Yes, thanks, Amy. If we can move to so this is, we're just looking for questions, but I actually wanted, before we get into questions from anyone, I wanted to kick off the group kind of sharing our individual reasons. Initially, when Tess asked library staff to join this group, one of the questions was, why do you want to be a part of this? And my initial reason, and still is my reason, is because I, as a Black woman, was tired of witnessing racism just kind of tear through my community and people dying from it. So I was tired of witnessing that, and then coming to work and experiencing microaggressions and macroaggressions from staff and from patrons. So if BPL was forming something that that is going to remedy, you know, something like this, or give us, you know, at least a milestone, which is why I think the advisory part is so important in our name. I wanted to help with that. I wanted to be on board with that completely. So I'll pass it on to Amy to give her reason for joining.
Oh, thanks, Jen. I'm so happy to be part of this and to be talking about this with you all, with the trustees. I came from a very non-diverse, of all kinds, but a special racial diversity upbringing until I was 18 and ran to New York City for college, but I did choose New York, ran to New York when I was 18. And when I was there, you may recognize this name, Amadou Diallo. He was in his 20s. He was a student. He was an immigrant from West Africa. And while I was there, he was killed by the police. He had been reaching for his wallet to show his ID to them. And I think like 19 bullets hit him. And it was my first awakening as a young adult to systemic racism, institutional racism, interpersonal, like really understanding, and started peeling back the onion and started learning and learning and learning, and the learning never ends. That was my beginning of activism in my personal life, and then later it became part of my professional life. So that's why I'm here. When we had this opportunity, I'm so grateful to be doing this work with these amazing colleagues. Perlita, I'll choose you.
Oh, popcorn style. I like that. I'm Perlita Payne. I'm a supervisor at Central Adult Services. And equity is something that I talk about all day long in my personal and professional life. I came into librarianship because of wanting equity and wanting to support that and promote it. Understanding that racism is part of American history. It's not in the past. It's very much in the present. There might be things that we can do to help eliminate it, or at least make it better for folks. And I want to be part of that. We're all affected by racism. I really truly believe that as well. I identify as an immigrant queer person of color. I'm very much in the intersections. And I was raised in South Berkeley when it was very working class and very poor. I got to see all kinds of inequalities here in, you know, my hometown. And coming back and working as a librarian, I really would like to work to improve it. And that's why I'm here. I'm passing it to Sheila.
Sorry, Sheila, it's kind of staticky. I'm sorry, I'm not sure if anybody else is hearing that as well, but I just wanted to, we really want to hear your answer, Sheila. So.
Sorry, I'll turn off the video. I think I've been having internet problems. Is that better in terms of?
Yes, it's better, hello? Sheila. You're good.
Okay, thank you. So one of the reasons that I wanted to join the RJAG team was, I think, a commitment to making the world a better place. There's a commitment to racial equity, and I think, in a sense, having conversations with our community about how to address those inequities that we see and how can we make things better for people and make it. So I guess who would be next? I guess it would be Linda.
Thank you, Sheila. I am Asian American and raised within the bittersweet culture of an immigrant family. I learned to navigate our lives through the pains and challenges of being in the minority and one of color, being different, being the target of racist attitudes. So now and always, I see our daily lives through this lens of having to overcome, not only to survive, but we need to thrive. I'm driven by professional and personal commitment to help our community and our library. I know we can do better. I know we can do better in equity, inclusivity, and diversity. And it really has been quite a trip to be on the RJAG team. It's been an honor. It's a learning curve. The microcosm of our group reflects what's going on within the infrastructure and community internally and outwards. So this is something we need to inspire and aspire for and just go forth. RJAG is necessary.
Thanks, Linda. So again, we open the floor to questions for anyone in attendance. And then I think whoever from RJAG has the answer, please feel free to hop in. So did I say Trustee Solosky has a question?
That's right.
All right.
I'm not sure it's a question. I'm going to lower my hand. I want to thank you for your work. I clearly hear and feel your commitment to this, and it's important. The board has had ongoing discussions about how we move equity forward, how we move these kinds of equity and inclusion issues to the forefront. And I think part of what's important for me is how you can inform that. But I think it's also important, and let me say this without judgment, and there's no agenda here, but I think it's also really important, as you did tonight, to come back and report out in a public forum. Because otherwise the community doesn't know what's going on. And I think it's important that community members hear about this, right? I think that's part of what we're trying to do here and bring some other voices in, if we can, to the degree we can. So again, I applaud you for your work. I applaud you for the commitment, and I support you wholeheartedly. Thank you.
Thank you. And Trustee Roth?
Yeah, I just want to join John in commending your work. It's great to hear about. It's very moving. And in terms of it epitomizes the idea of thinking globally but acting locally. Because really, I think it's important that we all cultivate our own garden. And if you can help us to do that, you know, that's great. That's great. And thank you for your work.
Thank you. Trustee Green.
Hello, I second what my colleagues have said. And I also want to say some things that that we all know. In this country, in this city, in this state, in this geography, you know, we all have very short memories. And so I want to encourage you to continue with this work. In this country, in this city, in this neighborhood, people move on to the next issues. So we had George Floyd in 2020. You know that people have started to move on. You know, what's going on with the president? What's going on with climate change? Now we have Roe v. Wade. But I want to encourage you to stay focused on this, and I will support you in any way that I can. But I know how short our memories are in this country, in this community, in this neighborhood, probably in the library too. And so continue to move forward with this work. And again, I will support you and give you any kind of support that I can to keep this on full blast, keep the gas pedal on. Let us not be overtaken by whatever the latest issue is. This is important work. Roe v. Wade is important, climate change is important, but somebody else is gonna do that. Keep working on this. The other thing that I want to ask is whether or not in your, you wrote down that you have three goals. One is equitable recruitment and retention. And I wonder if you have thought about also equitable promotions. Hmm. So that's one thing that I just wonder if you've thought about. We need equality in recruiting. We need equality and equity in retention. And we need equality and equity in promotional opportunities too. And I missed the part where you said that this would be extended to the rest of the staff. Tell me what was the timeline for that?
We didn't set a future timeline yet, but I'm not sure. Amy, did we have a future timeline set?
What do you mean share with the rest of the staff? Like share the, because we did a staff presentation back in the fall, which was like very, very long, about sort of what our basic learnings were from these three trainings. We went to three-day trainings, and that's how we started building up the skill set to be able to do racial equity tools that looks at specific issues like promotional opportunities, and once people get in those promotions, keeping them there, making sure they feel supported, you know. So we looked at racial equity tool, how that was going to feed into the racial equity plan. And after, I think actually next week is our first full day retreat where we're going to be working on this plan that we would then be bringing back to the full staff, bringing back also getting community stakeholders too involved, as well as yourselves. That's part of the whole, I guess, racial equity action plan process. But then also opening it up to the other staff, we know that we're just five people, and we both are truly committed to this work, and also truly committed to, we have big jobs too. So we are also talking about in terms of how do we get more people on this core committee? How do we get subcommittees going? Because there's so much work to be done. We've already identified, I don't think it was on the PowerPoint, but I mean, how many subgroups did we already identify that we needed? Like 10 or something like that?
13.
So
our other PowerPoint, all staff PowerPoint.
I don't know. I hope that, does that help, Trustee Green, what I was saying?
So I'll look forward to hearing about the timeline for expanding this to the rest of the staff and how often there will be the opportunity to reinforce amongst actually all key stakeholders in the library system. So I applaud you. Remember to just keep working on this. People have really short memories. They get involved in the next thing, climate change, Roe v. Wade, all of that. But this is actually really, this is important work. And it's just really important that we stay focused on this and that we have some opportunity to get it right in a lasting way so that we don't have to revisit 1992 over again in 2020. right? We don't have to do Rodney King and George Floyd to keep getting it. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Trustee Green. That's just very on point. Also with answering your question about supporting promotion, there, like Amy was saying, there's subgroups specifically that we want dedicated to certain things, and supporting people and people of color, Black people, Indigenous people in leadership roles was absolutely marked on our longer draft, which we'll be happy to share with you all as well. But it is posted in Bloop. I'm not sure if the trustees have access to Bloop, but it is also there. So I guess we'll move on to, is it Trustee Han that says District 5? I'm sorry. Is that you?
Okay. Yes, I'm sorry. I don't know why it came up like that. I guess I'm, anyway. So I'm just bowled over by this. This work is so deep, so eloquent, so important. And I guess what I, one thing I was really struck with, besides just gratitude for your doing the work and sharing it, is that sharing the work and doing the work are not the same thing. And what I really want is for us to all do the work. And even just here listening to you, I am moved, I am impressed, I read the words on the page, I hear the words coming from each of you, I feel the emotion, but I know it's not the same as doing the work myself or having every single person at the library do the work themselves. And I hope that in your recommendations, there will be opportunities for a broader spectrum of people at the library to do the work, not just to hear about it and hear recommendations, but actually to do it. And I also feel that we, our board members, need to be engaged with the work, not just hear your amazing presentation and feel the power of the work that you're doing. That we really need to do the work ourselves. And this is something that I've thought about it in the past. It's like a little complicated. We're a public board. If we were to all try to do this work together, it would be, the meetings would all be public. And that it's hard to open up in the same way that you might in a private setting. And I think some of the learning and the work is maybe difficult to do in public, right? So some of my thoughts are, you know, maybe we as a board need to think about this, or maybe you'll have some ideas for us. We could participate in it two at a time. We could participate in work with you. We could participate in this work in another forum if our presence as trustees, you know, we all know that we're just people like everybody else, and we are steeped in this incredibly racist society, and but it might be uncomfortable for others for us to be in the room. So, but I would like to find a way for us as trustees to either engage in this work with you somehow, with you meaning either just this group or with the whole library as they engage in the work, or that we actively seek other means for each of us, either in pairs or individually, to do work through another organization, through something. I'm just really wanting to do more than hear what you're doing and congratulate you and appreciate it. Because I think for the institution to really change, this board also has to do the work. I also really resonate with what Trustee Green has really been emphasizing in her comments, which is to stick with it and not be distracted There are a lot of problems for us to solve in the world. But this problem in this country and in this community and in this institution is perennial. And it doesn't go away unless we keep our focus on it here. And I will say that today in particular, I am disheartened with the abandonment of some of this work that you may not be aware of, but I'm very acutely aware of. The city council is engaged in work to reimagine public safety. And tomorrow we have a big council meeting to discuss proposals. And I've been engaged with a group that is bringing forward, seeking to bring forward truly transformative change to public safety in Berkeley. And I think there are 10 newsletters and emails circulating widely in the community right now, trashing us for doing the work and backpedaling on the commitments that we made to the community. Because it isn't easy. There's fear-mongering, there's retrenching. Institutions don't like to change. There are vested interests in institutions, and those vested interests don't want to cede any of their power. And even here in Berkeley, when we do not keep up our fight in the most courageous and persistent way, we will get dragged back. And it is happening literally as we are sitting here in this meeting. And it breaks my heart. So stick with it. Let's find a way as a board to actually do the work ourselves, either in parallel or together with this process. And thank you for bringing so much integrity and insight and transformation to our city.
Thank you for saying all that, Julie, Trustee Hahn. A lot of these things actually did come up in that CREATE training. Some of the other libraries who were further steps higher than us, they experienced pushback, resistance, on several different levels, whether it's public or administration, and then also having initiatives like this started before in reaction to something like Trustee Green said, and then kind of fading. So I'm glad you did bring up those points, because the team that was in charge of CREATE definitely gave us some tools to kind of combat that. So I'm happy we're not starting from ground zero on those kinds of things. And then you being involved in the city council as well doesn't start us from ground zero. But yes, it's very important. And I should have asked this before, but did anybody from RJAG want to respond to what Trustee Hahn was saying, or even what some of the trustees before said?
I'd like to offer, Chin, that just with respect to board participation, which I think we're all very much hearing, when the team identifies who we will be working with to provide training to staff, it is our intention that the board will also participate in the same training. And if we contract with a consultant with respect to equity and helping support the team in the development of the racial equity plan, you know, that individual will be somebody that we'll all be working closely with. In my experience, they generally work with organizations at all levels, sometimes including the board. So I just wanted to mention that because I think it'll be really important for us to be using the same language. And even though, you know, different EDI trainers, of course, cover some of the same concepts, I think it'll be more powerful for us, and it'll really facilitate communication within the organization if everyone is talking about things in a similar way. So I just wanted to mention that as a start, we will be doing that And I know that there are others who are waiting to comment.
Trustee Davenport.
Thanks. I want to echo what Beverly said too about the importance of keeping at the work. Long ago in the 1990s, I was very much involved in whenever job openings would come up, when it was time for library pages to take the library assistant test. We would have two or three of us come together and teach the group of aides how to respond to the library assistant questions and how to stay there. And we did it because we knew how important racial equity was. And that over the years just went by the board. And I think it's so important that you guys are a committee now watching this and who can track it, who can see that important steps get put in place in the library and that they stay there. I think that's just the most exciting thing to me about the work you're doing so that we can build on what has happened in the past, not let it falter so that we have to go back and begin at the beginning. So congratulations to that. And the other thing I'd like to say is that I think it's important that the words racial justice come out of our mouths. And every time you say I'm on RJAG, you miss that opportunity. And I think we should say it's a racial justice committee and we should keep saying those words day after day after day. And RJAG doesn't do that. So let's say it. Let's say what we're doing and make a commitment to do it and to keep it happening. Thanks.
Thank you. And Trustee Green?
I'm sorry, I just need to make two more comments. And so Sophie, I'm glad that you brought up about the board because obviously the board needs to consider these important initiatives as it looks at itself, right? And I'll just leave it at that. And then I'll just make this general comment. I've shared this with Tess before. So I'm glad that you're looking at the different collections. I'm glad you're looking at employees. And I know this is a problem for the city of Berkeley, right? And let me just say, I grew up in Berkeley and I moved away and I came back. So I've seen the pendulum switch, right? From when Berkeley used to be integrated to what it is now. But I would, and I don't know where you can put this or whatever, but I would strongly or have you considered looking at your supplier and vendor partnerships to make sure to consider pulling from a diverse group of consultants and suppliers and vendors and people that we contract. And again, I know this is a problem for the city of Berkeley. Berkeley doesn't contract with enough businesses of color. But I believe that in the library, we always go back to, well, this is the person who did the big city library, and this is the person who created this in the big city library, and this is the person who created this room in the other big city library. And it doesn't provide an opportunity for new vision or for consideration from diverse suppliers and partners and contractors and consultants. So I hope that you might consider that also. And like, let's not just continue to go back to the same people that we've gone to before, but let's consider that there be some diverse new vendors and new voices that are able to build things with the city of Berkeley that reflect some sort of diversity in themselves or, you know, put together a project labor agreement or something like that. Thank you.
Thank you. I know for sure for programming, I know Perlita can speak to this. That has definitely been in discussion. So, and different lists have been shared amongst librarians and program facilitators. So for sure, but to even to go even deeper at the into vendors, like you were saying, very important. I definitely would take note of that. And did anyone else want to speak from RJAG or Tess? Even did anybody want to respond to any of the trustees' comments? And thank you all again. The support is definitely felt. So I definitely have more confidence kind of moving forward, especially just having met all of you for the first time. And then just quickly too, I just wanted to respond to something Trustee Han said. It did also come up in our training, kind of that fear that is felt when speaking about these things amongst employees, when everyone is involved like this, that we have to definitely let that go. I think it does need to be addressed initially when we speak with staff and then have, you know, managers and supervisors and trustees involved. Like, there definitely needs to be something noted to that. So I definitely will keep that in mind as well. That's a big takeaway for me.
I do want to mention that, and on positive note, my understanding is there's been a committee, or there's a committee perhaps that's forming among city staff that will be looking at or addressing the issue that was identified around the City of Berkeley contracting process. And I don't know what the current status is in terms of how much work has been done, but I know that city departments were asked to volunteer people to participate, which is good. And I also just want to say that it's such a significant issue. I was talking with our supervising librarian, Heather Cummins, about this because she, as you know, has coordinated a lot of really great events, and we're able to draw from funds from the Friends and the Foundation. I think it's important for us to look at those purchasing processes and look at whether or not we can create more flexibility and opportunity there as well. I think that's part of the work that we'll have to do. She was describing to me that the process of trying to contract with a vendor to provide the taco trucks at these various events we've had. And she was describing to me what she had to do to facilitate working with these people, right? She found somebody who was able to provide the service. He was excited, but then they had to complete all these forms, and the forms are in English. And the person that she was working with actually was speaking Spanish, and someone was interpreting for this person. And, you know, you think, oh, that's just a marginal thing. They'll figure it out. They'll get the contract. No, that's not how people do business or get business. And so it's a very, I think, simple example of how the exclusion happens, because that's when somebody says, you know, it's not worth it. I can't deal with this right now. You know, I've got other issues to address with my business, and they move on. And that's how we lose people. So I think that's where the money changes hands, right? So I think it's extremely important to look at how that works. And I know that can happen with presenters too, in terms of barriers to participation. How hard are we making it for people to participate? When are they getting a check from us? How long do they have to wait for that check? Those are issues that I became really familiar with when I was more involved in providing public programming, but I know it's a huge problem. So I just wanted to say thank you for bringing that up too, because part of this is also economic, and, you know, we're looking to establish economic equity as well. And I think that's part of what we have to look at. And I'm also really happy that we brought Mai on board, our associate HR analyst, because she does have experience in looking at these issues. And she and I have had some really great conversations already around some things that we could do to address some of the stuff that has been raised tonight. So we're lucky to have her on our team, and she'll be working with the Racial Justice Advisory Group as well.
I just wanted to quickly add that it's so nice to hear all the positive comments and encouragements, because we've really just been working, just the five of us and six of us when we had Stuart, and, you know, we're great at having our conversations, but it's really great to have feedback and, you know, to have people who can see and understand and want to share in our work, like, you know, So I appreciate that a lot. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you all. Linda Sakamoto, it is nice to see you. I haven't seen you in such a long time.
May I say the pleasure is mine, Trustee Amy Roth?
Yes, you may.
It's so cool. It's so nice to see everyone here.
It is nice. It'll be even nicer one of these days when we can be in the same room.
I know.
I'm anxious for that to happen.
I know. We all on our Zoom screens, these funny little Zoom screens.
is your report finished? It was excellent. Brilliant.
Thank you so much.
Yes,
thank you.
Thank you for the support. Okay, Tess, you're up next.
Thank you, everybody. Oh, it looks like Trustee Hahn, are you?
I'm sorry. I did not see your hand. I have to look.
I wanted to just slip in between those two items, if I may. I'd like to have to change my vote on the bylaws and be recorded as voting aye. And I just want to apologize to folks still recovering from COVID, which is still really dragging me down. And then one of my adult kids is dealing with a tragedy in his friend group and happened to literally pop in to my house 2 minutes before the beginning of this meeting. So I was a little unfocused at the beginning, and I did have a chance to read the bylaws as presented. And I really wanted to have the opportunity to thank Director Mayer for actually bringing this incredibly heavy and time-intensive project to conclusion. And I really appreciate the changes that are in the document before us that really reflect, quite frankly, all my input and no doubt all yours as well. And I just wanted to thank her for all the work it has taken to get this done. So I just wanted to interject. I don't know, at council, if we haven't closed the meeting, the clerk usually allows us to change our how our vote is recorded. And I'm hoping I can do that to an enthusiastic yes.
Thank you, Sophie.
Okay, thank you.
I don't see any hands except Sophie, so I'm assuming you're done. So Tess, you are on now.
Well, I do want to just say thank you to all of the members of the Racial Justice Advisory Group that are still here, that are leaving. And I also appreciate the trustees taking the time and providing your attention to this. I know that they've been working so hard over the past year to prepare, and a lot of times, you know, the process that people go through to get to this point is not always transparent, because there's so much personal work that happens, I think, when you begin to focus on this, regardless of who you are. And I know that they've had to devote a lot of time and energy to that process, personally as well as professionally. So switching gears a little bit in terms of the director's report, one of the things I wanted to mention first is that the Public Libraries Association conference actually happened in person in March, which may not seem like a significant thing, but we were just so amazed that it actually took place in person. And this is a really significant conference for us. Obviously, there's the American Library Association Conference, which is sort of the big giant of the library conferences, but the Public Library Association one is sort of our our main conference, because it's where all of the issues around public libraries obviously are focused on and discussed. And we were able to send three staff. Perlita, who was just with us, was one of those people who was able to go. And I was just so happy. One of the central themes that was covered in the conference, of course, was equity, diversity, inclusion. This is a predominant national conversation happening in public libraries. And there's actually been a lot of great work and leadership in this arena that's been happening for many years now. And it was great that our staff were able to attend some of these sessions. There were also a lot of sessions, I think, about staff wellness, as well as safety and security. Amanda Myers, who is one of the staff who's with us right here, and she was also able to attend. So Amanda, please do chime in if I misrepresent anything, but I would encourage all the trustees, if there's any part of the board packet that you read, apart from the budget and the bylaws, I really would encourage you to look at the reports from the staff. I asked them to provide them to you because I thought it would be interesting for you to see what stood out to them. One of the things that really caught my attention was something that Dan shared. He's one of our supervising librarians. And he had said that, you know, he came prepared to learn a lot, but one of the things that I really liked, was heartened by, was his comment that attending the conference really reinforced for him that our organization is moving in the right direction. And he just expressed a lot of appreciation for the support of our board and our community. We're so lucky to have the financial support that we have. Many public libraries are struggling all the time, and that we're able to actually take action in the arenas that are important and the arenas that count. He spoke about a Richland Public Library, which really has been a national leader in public libraries for a long time, around issues related to EDI and also in a lot of other ways. And one of the things that he was learning about was the ways that that library system had to transform its policies around suspending people, and how basically behavior management policies were modified because, like a lot of systems, they observed that there was a disproportionate impact on people of color. And I think that that's an issue that's relevant for Berkeley Public Library. I think that we have to examine that very closely and try to come to some new understanding of how we're going to manage all of those issues. We've talked about that in this forum a number of times more recently, but he was able to identify a system that provided a really good example around change in that area. And I think that that's really exciting when you have something to work off of. I also wanted to mention that a couple of the staff were really struck by a presentation from Ozzy Alosium, who is the equity, diversity, and inclusion lead manager or director, I'm not sure what her title is, from Denver Public Library. And they instituted a program that was really around sort of care, self-care for staff and how to support staff, including how to differently support BIPOC staff. And it was interesting to see that how impactful that workshop was. And Ozzy is somebody who does a lot of workshops locally in the Bay Area, and maybe someone that we work with in terms of consulting for training or just getting additional advice around all of these different themes. And so I think that was striking. I also just wanted to kind of pivot slightly, talk a little bit. I wanted to express first appreciation for our friends of the Berkeley Public Library. The Friends provided a lot of support in terms of making sure that we could provide snacks and just different types of refreshments to all of the library staff on the National Library Workers Day. But they also provided some funds to provide mobile massages to the staff that were working during our last all staff or our all staff day meeting, which was on Friday the 29th. We were able to have some therapists come out and visit the locations and provide chair massages to staff that wanted them. we will need to do it again because some people missed out because they weren't scheduled to work. And I know that wasn't fair. So we have to find a different way to do that. But it was really generous. And I think, you know, we had looked, the staff had provided a lot of feedback and suggestions about how we could be supporting them, especially when times are so difficult. And that was a suggestion that came up several months ago. And so we pursued it, but I wanted to thank the Friends for their financial support of that. We engaged in a very fun activity where we created certificates and basically identified unique awards for every staff member. And we asked supervisors and also their colleagues to provide feedback into their unique contributions as staff. And so everyone received, I'll show you an example. Sorry, I should have had this. Very lovely awards that Eve put together. So thank you, Eve. And we delivered to every location, and it was just really fun. And we embedded it in the staff presentation so that everyone could see everyone else's awards. And I think people appreciated being recognized, especially for what they contributed during the pandemic period, because, you know, there were people doing all sorts of different things and, you know, really rising to the occasion. And I think we were trying to capture that. We were trying to capture some of the things that people did to help really get us through that period. And clearly we're not done, as you all emphasized in the beginning. And of course, we've all been affected in different ways. We're not done. And I also think it was important for us to take stock of where we had been and where we were going. And so that was another point of emphasis for our all staff meeting on last Friday, the April 29th, was to really talk about our future goals and what we'll be focusing on in the coming years. So that was another purpose for the all staff meeting. And I think it was really helpful for us to be able to take the time. We did have a really wonderful event outside the Claremont Branch Library. I described it in my written report. We had had such a successful outreach event to the students at Berkeley High School to alert them to the existence of the teen room, which really is quite successful. And I see teens in there all the time, and it just makes me smile. And I'm so excited that we'll soon have a teen librarian that will actually be able to be in the teen room when they get out of school. And when they go to the teen room, we'll have somebody in there who'll be able to engage with the youth, which is what it's all about. But I was really happy that our supervising librarian, Heather Cummins, was able to work with a lot of other staff from around the system, including Chin, who you just met, was actually unfortunately out that day, but she was supposed to also be able to participate. And we invited the students from Willard Middle School over to Claremont for tacos to help connect them to the library. It's a very successful event. There are some really wonderful quotes that Andrea Malarkey, our teen librarian from Torrey Hall Pittman South, captured, just what she overheard people saying. And I think it was really inspiring and successful in terms of making sure that we were connecting with that segment of the community and that they were aware of the existence of the branch library. So we'll continue doing that. The goal now is to do one in all of our regions. And staff has reported really enjoying working as a team as we do these events. One of the things that we've talked a lot about as we onboard all of the new staff is emphasizing that we're one team, the central library, all of the branches, that we work together, that we're not siloed, that we have the same service goals and vision. And I think that these events are really wonderful examples of that. So I will pause here and see whether there were any questions, either in terms of what I was just sharing or the written report. Trustee Roth.
I just want to say I really enjoyed reading those staff reports that came back from the conference. And I've always had the opinion that staff development is really important. And I consider that to be it. You know, they go out, they're energized, they come back with things to share. You know, it's just great. I think it's, and I'm really glad they went, were able to go. And I loved reading the stuff that they wrote.
Trustee Green?
Will there be, will you be sharing any of the PowerPoints that they presented, or are you going to, is there a way to, I've never been to the Public Library Association conference, obviously, but will you be, is there an opportunity to sort of learn more about what happened? Like, do they have virtual sessions online, or?
That's a great question. It's really evolved more recently. And a lot of the time, if you pay for registration, you are able to access the slides and sometimes other handouts that were associated with particular presentations. And so one of the things that I can do is ask the staff whether they can still access online some of the actual content that came from the presentations, because sometimes it remains online for some time. And because we paid for the registration, we're allowed to access it. And one of the really great things about the profession is that as long as you credit people's intellectual property, you know, generally librarians will share and you know, make sure that people have those materials for learning. So I can ask them whether there are any handouts that are still available, or, you know, that they were able to download or keep from the presentations that they thought were more inspiring.
Thank you.
Another thing that we've done in past years, and I would be remiss if I didn't say this, is sometimes trustees attend conferences. So forgive me for not saying that initially, but you know, there are some great conferences. Personally, I've been inspired by the Urban Libraries Council conferences. I think they're really good sometimes, and really good. And it's great when trustees and staff can both attend, because it really fuels, I think, some good conversations, but also movement forward. And usually the Urban Libraries conferences are thematic, and you know, there'll be a conference on data or something like that, but I think either way, it's a great opportunity when we're able to dialogue and attend some of the same sessions. So that's something that I should mention too. Well, thank you very much. That concludes my report.
Thank you. Thank you, Tess. Okay, so items for future agendas. Okay, I think this might be the place to apologize for having to cancel the closed session, or maybe it was welcome to some, but you know, Sophie and I have been working on this, and we decided that we really were not quite ready to come before you with a proposal. And instead we used that time slot to have the City of Berkeley's interim human, I'm sorry, what's the word? The personnel.
Czar.
Is that what somebody said?
Czar Human Resources.
Yes, the Czar of Human Resources to meet with us. And it was time very well spent, and we will be able, excuse me, to shortly present a proposal to all of you regarding Tessa's salary review. It was really worth it, because we feel like it shaved at least 6 weeks off the process that we were trying to figure out. So you will soon see something from us regarding that. And so that I guess is my discussion of an item to be added to future agendas. does anybody else? Beverly, I see you.
So I just want to make sure, because I did not log on at 5:30. So the meeting that you had at 5:30, that was just you and...
Yes, Sophie. Okay,
great.
Yes, yes. That's okay. Right.
Thanks.
I don't see any other hands except Tess's.
I do want to mention that it is still our intention to come back to the board with a more comprehensive report just relating to safety and security. I think that that's been captured in our notes, but I did want to reinforce that it's still our intention. I think that it needs to be a pretty robust report because we'd like to provide you with data with respect to incidents, including just information for you to be aware of around how frequently have we had violent incidents, how are we defining that, how frequently have we had to call the police. Fortunately, we do have an incident reporting system, but it doesn't really lend itself to reporting on some of those things. We're gonna have to generate some of that manually. So I just wanted to explain that, and I think it is something important to come back to. I also wanted to mention that because the libraries were closed, and then of course the Central Library had the construction project, we weren't really providing the take and leave literature that public libraries usually do, and we weren't posting signs and notices like we usually do. But we need to start doing that again, and we need to prepare for that. And so one of the things we'll be bringing forward is the bulletin board and literature policy for your review, because I think that's something that we do need to provide as a service that we had suspended during the pandemic. And I think that people are eager to have that come back. So I just wanted to mention that that is an upcoming topic. And we'll also need to review it in terms of equity, diversity, inclusion. One of the things that most racial equity teams do in libraries is they also review policies. Now, the ultimate authority over the policy resides with the board. But what we do is we ask groups like this to consult on the policy and really consider who is impacted by this policy, who is differently impacted, who's left out, what is not accounted for. And that's something that group will also start engaging in as well. So when we talk about issues around hate speech and freedom of speech in libraries, that's a really important place for racial equity teams to weigh in. So that will be an aspect of that conversation as well.
Okay. Well, Tess, will that also, is that the place where we might be discussing security guards, or is that a different topic?
That is a report that we need to provide, but that's distinct from the report about the bulletin board and the free literature distribution point
policy. No, I meant the...
Oh, sorry.
I meant the safety and security.
Yeah, I think, yes, sorry, I completely misunderstood. So yes, in my view, it really needs to be comprehensive. We really can't separate that out because I think the board needs to be aware of the different safety and security interventions that we've applied, you know, the different strategies that we've used, why we've made some of the choices we've made, you know, also historically, where has the library been? Where is it going? I think that there is work for us to do on the issue, but I think that it's really important for you to have a more holistic view of not only sort of what the landscape is, but also what are all the different things in place as we talk about issues around security guards as well as police. And now we have the social services specialist that we fortunately will be able to hire soon. And how does that position fit in as well? So I think it just needs to be comprehensive. And yes, that's what I meant. Sorry about that.
No, that's okay. I do not see other hands up. So I think that we can and entertain a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second. Okay, John, can we have a second?
Second.
Okay, Diane, thank you. And do we have to take the roll on that? I guess we do.
Yes,
okay.
We do.
Okay, on everything.
Yep.
Amy Roth?
Yes, please.
Sophie Hahn?
Yes, and thank you.
Diane Davenport?
Yes.
Beverly Green?
Yes.
And John Solowski?
Yes, and thank you all.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Good meeting.
Great meeting tonight.
Thank you, Tess.
You too. Take care.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye.